Be the right club. Be the right club today.
Yes! Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast special edition here. It is 9:46 p.m. here Sunday night in Abu Dhabi. I'm just going to say it, full disclosure, we've been drinking.
A little bit.
We've been drinking.
Do we want to say that here?
It's a safe place. We can do whatever we want.
We're in a hotel room.
We are about to get on a 2:30 a.m. flight here from Abu Dhabi to JFK. But before we left, we wanted to debrief on our pretty, I think it's pretty safe to call it a pretty special week here in Abu Dhabi.
It was. Came in with, I don't even think we came in with expectations.
I had absolutely no idea what to expect. I think I remember like an interview or something Rory did back in the day when he said something like, yeah, and you know, obviously there's a lot of expats in Dubai. And I remember thinking like, hey, maybe that's obvious. I didn't know that until he said that. Like I had no idea what the Middle East was like, what any of this place was like, why golf came here, why it was so important here. I think I understand it a lot better now.
It's kind of the situation where we're a little bit of ignorant Americans.
A little bit.
And we try to stay away from that connotation.
It is, but
as much as possible, but I think in this instance we didn't know what we were getting ourselves into.
It's so far away from the US and it's much more commonplace for Europeans. I mean, we met people from legitimately probably 35 to 40 countries this week, but the majority were from somewhere in Europe or had some kind of tie to Europe.
But, and as far away from, you know, Australia, Zimbabwe, South Africa, Mexico, Canada, like, yeah, people from, you know, Asia, all over the place. It was, like the U.S. calls itself the melting pot, but
Abu Dhabi, Dubai. So we haven't been to Dubai. We've heard a lot of things about Dubai and we've learned a lot. I'll be honest. I didn't know as of like 3-4 years ago before we started kind of covering some of these events that Abu Dhabi and Dubai were different places. I legitimately didn't know that.
Can we say it the right way though? Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi.
Like all the, there's so many Brits here. There's so many.
Like every European tour voiceover comes from
Abu Dhabi.
Abu Dhabi. So we the full disclosure, we were invited to come out by the tournament, and but a lot of things kind of went into consideration before we came. I mean, it's a long, long trip to make.
We've been invited out by other tournaments as well.
Correct. And
we
said
try
no.
to be discerning to those.
Right.
Not to not like we're not trying to toot our own horn. It's just we want to bring unique experiences and unique personalities and relevant fields.
It's,
as well.
Yeah. Opposite the career builder made it a pretty easy decision. Like if this was opposite Torrey Pines and Tiger, like it'd be pretty hard to say to, you know, kind of ignore the PGA Tour for a week. But like I said, never been to this part of the world. And there's a reason that a ton of players come play this. One of those reasons is obviously appearance fees, like the dirty little secret. Not even a secret.
I don't even think it's a secret. No. They're pretty upfront about it.
Yeah. They're not trying to hide it. Players get paid to come play this event, but everyone I kind of told, even though they're somewhat in the industry that had been here, kind of started saying to me like, oh, you're going to love it there. You're going to love it. And I kind of thought, I mean, like what were you expecting before you came?
I mean, honestly, the first 2 or 3 days I was kind of still in
not
limbo.
Sold.
Yeah. I wasn't sold. And then we got off the flight and, you know, we'd heard things that they were going to tax our cameras.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it just seemed like we were going to this ultra exotic place when really after being on the ground here, I think the thing that woke me up was kind of the Friday brunch scene.
Oh my God.
And just the number of expats here. But, I don't know. I guess we've been here 7 days now. I feel really comfortable.
Well, we know, like to explain it, we didn't know whether or not you could legitimately drink in this country, and we didn't know.
Yeah,
like we left the tournament at 7:30 on Friday night, and it was like any bar scene you could like at the actual tournament. The place was overflowing with people,
and this wasn't just at the tournament too. Like people had said, hey, make sure you go out in the city in Abu Dhabi, or if you make it up to Dubai, go out on, you know, Friday midday and just go out and get brunch.
Yeah.
And we're like, all right, whatever. And then we kind of saw it and we're like, okay, that's what they were talking about.
That's what they mean. You know? So we'll talk a little bit more about Abu Dhabi, but I first want to talk about the actual golf tournament. So one of the reasons we wanted to come, it is the best field in golf this week. Dustin Johnson's here. Matt Kuchar's here from the U.S. perspective. Bryson DeChambeau was also here, although that was a bit of an abbreviated
visit. They take pride in their USAM and British AM champs,
right?
Here, which I respect.
Yeah,
you know, but yeah, Bryson acted like a child all week, or actually, he didn't act like a child all week. He acted like a child on the back nine each day. He played well the first nine and then he acted like a child the rest of the day.
That was the intel that we had received. And I did witness him just absolutely chuck a ball at his caddy.
I feel like he's making strides, but he's not close yet.
He's getting in his own way a little bit. Tron just quit his job, if you'd heard on one of the more recent podcasts, and this was his kind of first full week covering golf, and kind of broke the shackles off of getting in the lab, getting writing
getting the mix. Yeah. I kind of had to convince DJ, you know, hey man, let me get out there.
Let me go.
Yeah.
We couldn't convince DJ to come. DJ missed. I'm just going to say it. Sorry, DJ missed out. It actually worked out great. So we shot a bunch of stuff for the first five days, send all that back home to DJ to edit. So shout out to DJ for the awesome editing and the video work that we did this week. But your first European Tour event, did it feel starkly different from covering a PGA Tour event?
At first, no. I mean, everything was kind of similar. And I was trying to, one of the things I said to DJ was I was trying to get kind of out of my comfort zone and get totally, you know, just totally break the spell of my day job and just dive headfirst into laying up stuff. I think that's like mission accomplished, because it was golf, 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 golf. And it didn't feel outwardly different at first until I heard the music on the range. That was the first thing. It was
so there is actual audible music on the driving range with speakers towards the players while they hit on the range.
And for the most part, it was pretty good music. I think the first day it was like, I don't know, kind of elevator 80s pop music. But like I think there was a DJ spinning one day on it, and then
some Vanessa Carlton going, like they had some like just some kind of catchy hits.
Fire?
Yeah, they had some heat.
but it totally altered the whole, and I know it's a season opening event and everything is very a little bit more like everybody's in a good mood, everybody's happy to be out here and had kind of a little bit of time to decompress from the prior season,
right?
Everybody's ready to get back cracking at it. But on the same token, it definitely just set the vibe for the whole range, and everybody was just in a good mood. It was a positive atmosphere.
It did, like, and I think their actual theme for the photo shoot that we saw on Tuesday was like back to school theme. Like they took yearbook photos, and that was kind of like their theme or whatever for the. But it was kind of like a reunion of people, and just we kind of got to see like the camaraderie between the guy. And I know everyone talks about, oh, guys on the European Tour are just closer than they are on the PGA Tour, but we did kind of get a glimpse into that. And getting to spend a little bit of time out on the course watching guys I wouldn't usually get to see with crowds down. There were some big crowds on Friday, especially, and some on Saturday, but
even today,
you get into some remote parts of the course and there's only a few people around, and you just overhear the conversations the guys have and just the banter back and forth, and that comes with, I don't know, the whole general attitude out on this tour was kind of, it's your first European Tour event.
Yeah, it was, I don't know, they were glad to have you out there, and they were glad that you were, it was more about the golf than it was the ancillary elements of the tournament, which was refreshing.
But on top of that, like, you and I had kind of wandered around a little bit without it being like shoved down your throat. Like, we just kind of walked down to this, like the village, like by the range.
We've been here since Monday midday. We didn't make it to the village until Saturday afternoon. Nobody really told us to go there. We did Topgolf thing. We did rugby,
cricket.
Tim Henman was out there.
Yeah, we did a long drive contest. We did the Topgolf Crush thing, which is some shaky scoring going on that, but whatever. All right, before we rave too much more
because
about the tournament,
I doubled up. I think I had 540 versus
it was
270.
The scoring got all messed up. But anyways, let's talk about Tommy Fleetwood. A couple hours ago, just shot a back 930 in the wind to defend his title at the Abu Dhabi champion HSBC championship presented by EGA.
Aluminum. Aluminum tubes.
Emirates Global Aluminum, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that back 9:30?
Yeah, I was a little bit. I was actually in the media center in the front nine. I kind of went out to the range when guys were warming up, and then Sully went out on the course after we watched, you know, the first or the last few groups tee off. And I was like, all right, go have at it. I'm going to go watch, because it was such a tightly bunched leaderboard.
It was hard to guess what was going to be the group to follow.
Yeah, you had five or six guys within three or four shots of the lead. And the wind was blowing this morning, too. So that was kind of something that we hadn't seen the first.
It was a birdie fest for the first 3 days. It was pretty easy.
It's not a short golf course by any stretch, and the greens were pretty frothy.
7,600 yards.
Yeah, like but just, you know, there's not a whole lot of elevation change, and kind of it's in front of you. And then when the wind starts blowing, especially from the direction it blew from today, it's not necessarily dead into you, or it's always hurting or helping a little bit off of one side. So it adds a lot more complexity to it. But yeah, Sully went out and followed. Who'd you follow the first nine?
So Rory and Fitz. Rory was one back. Fitz was two back going into it. And I got to see some of each of those guys the first few rounds. And I was, you know,
some of each of those.
Well, Rory and DJ were paired together. And we got to see. And so Rory, DJ, Fleetwood played the first few rounds and got to follow that. And Fleetwood definitely hits it shorter than both of those guys, but DJ, Rory are right next to each other in driving distance, and just kind of watching the lines they took, the lines Fleetwood took were not like consequentially different, but you know, Fleetwood,
except for 14.
Yeah. And Fleetwood just is 20 yards further back, but for the most part can kind of play a similar game. I picked up Fitz after he went out in 29 on Saturday and kind of watched him play that back nine.
And he hit 29, or he shot 29 and hit two fairways.
Correct.
And we watched him warm up, and he was
searching on the range.
Yeah, I felt like it was going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah, and he went out in 29.
Lowest front nine score in the history of this course or tournament.
Can we talk about the no laying up podcast bump? It's real. It's a real thing.
It is real.
It's the fact. The evidence is. It's a factual thing. And then watched him on a couple holes on the back, and watched him like take three wood on a couple dogleg holes that Rory, DJ, legitimately hit wedge into.
Yeah, they have license to just fly over the bunker without regard.
And he's hitting probably four iron into. And I was the stark difference that comes from, like, a, you know, the different styles of play, and seeing how much hitting the ball, how much it opens up some holes that, you know, some guys just absolutely get punished by. And we talked to Richie Ramsey a lot. We talked to a lot of guys just about strategy around this course. And it's like, all right, this thing's set up for bombers. I mean, let's just call it like it is. I mean,
well, that's the thing. I think Andy Johnson from Friday is always talking about kind of how dog legs are almost misused in the modern game, where it's kind of a speed bump or a separator between guys who are, you know, bombers and guys who are more tacticians and precision guys. And this was like the 14th hole out there today was evident of, you know, like there shouldn't be, it should be, all right, if you feel comfortable taking it down the left side and getting the correct angle versus hitting a little bit longer and taking it down the right side versus, like, there was none of that decision making was inherent in that. It was either I have to deal with this bunker and I have to deal with the dog leg, or the dog leg is totally irrelevant and I'm flying it completely over it.
Right.
I'm going to have a wedge in my hand versus a five iron.
Right. We saw a lot of, I don't know if butchery is the right word, but just kind of like some of the stuff these guys were doing, just, all right, that's not golf strategy.
I was a little bit shocked too. Like, I played the Pro-Am. Shout out to Solly for caddying for me.
I'm not a hero.
But that was relatively insightful for me, because it was, I don't know, I had trouble with the rough. I mean, it was kind of sticky, fescue-ish, like overseed rye type rough. And like, these guys were saying this is like half the rough that they've had in previous years.
Really?
Where you don't really ascribe rough to a very dry desert course, but, you know, they said it was tougher this year than in years past, just because they've stretched it out a little bit and the greens were a little bit faster, but the rough was like half of what it was in previous year.
It's safe to say that Sergio Garcia's first tournament as a Callaway staff member at the Singapore Open went pretty well. He won the event going away by five shots, and here's what he had to say about Callaway after the round. He said, "I love it. I love the golf ball. The golf ball is amazing. The woods are incredible, and the irons are great. The wedges are very nice, and the putter, they just made me a new one, the Azalea, which is really nice. Obviously, I'm really pleased with everything right now, and I still feel like I can get better. Visit CallawayGolf.com/jailbreak to check out the new Rogue lineup, including the fairway woods, which now feature jailbreak technology from Callaway. Callaway, the number one driver and fairway wood in golf. Sergio had the Rogue driver, the Rogue 3 and 5 wood, and the Apex MB irons, Mac Daddy 4 wedges, and the Toulon designed Azalea putter, and the Chrome Soft X golf ball. Safe to say Sergio's feeling good with the new gear and off to a hot start this year. Now back to the podcast. What happened with Fleetwood? And again, he won here last year and has since, in the last year, gotten married and had a kid. He had a kid, like, what, how old is his kid? 4 months old?
4 months.
Came back here.
Frankie.
Had to deal with the, just the, everything that comes with defending a title, all of the media attention, all of the obligations and all the distractions. And I think, I assuming the tournament kind of like sets you up with more family rooms and stuff like that. I mean, he had a big entourage.
Well, talking to his dad had come last year as well. So like they've come here prior because it's just a comfortable place for them to come. But, you know, talking to him about, I don't know, just like he won the Player of the Year trophy for last year's season, but they presented that this week. And not only that, I think just it's a little bit different when you're defending and you're already relatively established in your career. He is, what was he at the end of, or at the beginning of last season?
Somebody said it, but probably before this event last year, again, that he won, he was like 188th in the world. And I think as of right now, he's 12th.
Yeah.
Like that is just a...
And it hasn't been any like fluky wins either.
No. No. So, yeah, I want to talk weight, like yeah. European rankings, Ryder Cup, all that stuff.
But Fleetwood like, just, is not... just specific to Fleetwood, he's very, I think with his, like it's just been this steadily upward trajectory, like WGC Mexico last year, US Open, mm-hmm. this tournament last year. For him to come back, be defending, win Player of the Year trophy, have all that go on in his personal life, and then follow up kind of the first really exceptional season of his career, and then just come right back out and get back to it and just pick up right where he left off. Like, to me, that's, he validated everything that he did last year. And I don't know, he's just like, just talking to him and being around him and seeing how he interacted with the fans, like the manner in which he did all of that. And the grace and the
right.
Like, I don't know. I think he's like I'm as big a fan as
right. So let's separate out how cool he is on one side and talk about just him as a player. So I hate to come back to like Noren as being my punching bag, but people kind of generalize what I say about European golfers and to think that I hate all of them. And it's like, all right, if you can't see the difference between Noren and Fleetwood, and I know Noren's had an incredible run, but you know his rise to like top 10 in the world. You shouldn't be looking at Noren and being like, yeah, that's a top 10 player in the world. Now,
Uline, let me get through Porter it. And all those guys are going to be upset with you.
Let me get through it. Let me get through it. If you don't look at Fleetwood and see a top 10 player, like you're just wrong. If you can't see the difference between like those two players and separate out the criticisms I've had about rankings and stuff like that, then I can't help
you. Because he's done it everywhere.
Exactly. So yeah. Fleetwood is a absolute star. Like there's no debating that.
I feel the same way about Fleetwood that I do about Leishman.
Yeah, that totally.
Like,
I can see
totally,
that.
Totally, like just genuinely nice guys that you want to cheer for, but on the course they're not the longest guys out there, but
they're long enough.
But they drive it straight and they are absolute
flushers.
Assassins with their irons.
Yeah. They hit it. And again, like it just going like Fleetwood is going to be an incredible asset to the European Ryder Cup team. There's no one on the U.S. side.
We'll get to the Ryder Cup.
I know. Yeah. Like this week, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I'm just reading my mentions too much, but like people have lost perspective. It's like people, some of my mentions
I don't know.
Like,
well, any European tour guys listening to this, I'd be careful what you're saying around Saleh because I feel like he's like a mole or something. You can say whatever you want to me, but
what am I a mole? What do you mean I'm spying for?
I feel like you're gonna take this stuff. You're gonna take this intel back to the U.S. team and say, hey,
take it to Jimmy Furyk. Like,
this is how they're gonna set this shit up and all this stuff.
It's actually they did give us some insight that they're gonna be making this course pretty narrow. Yeah. But no, I don't know. I think. People are overly generalizing the way U.S. fans think about this upcoming Ryder Cup. No, and again, we'll talk more about Ryder Cup in the future here, but the 2016 European team was a weak team. I said it before the event. I said it after the event. Like, it just wasn't a strong team. The 2014 U.S. team was not a strong team. Like, on
paper. The 2006 U.S. team was not a strong team.
Oh, don't get me started about that. This year is going to be an unbelievably good matchup.
I think these guys said, they said, you know, after last year's matchup, you know, talking to some of the assistant captains and talking to some of the players, they said, hey, like, they went up to Davis afterwards and were like, this is like, you were a little bit cheeky in the way you set it up, and that you,
oh yeah,
you know, the mo lines were way, way wide, and you know, things were,
yeah, I don't know how I feel that I don't see like totally drastic differences in, enough in style to have that matter that,
I don't know,
much,
man. talking to Richie won the U.S. amateur at Hazeltine,
right?
So he knows that course. He met his wife that week. Right. So he has very pleasant memories of, this is Richie Ramsey, very pleasant memories of Hazeltine. And he said, he was like, yeah, the way they set that course up was absolutely, you know, absolutely just
yeah,
kind of
favoring bombers. I get it. But yeah. I just think, like, I don't know. I don't think that the two teams play that different of a style that it's like, oh, well, we're going to set up the team,
yeah,
a course,
like,
that you can't play. The
somebody
US
like
guys
Matt,
can't play
somebody
on.
Like Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I look at like DJ. What did he win Mexico last year? He did, right?
I think so. It was like him and Fleetwood duel.
Yeah,
yeah.
And like JT has won like on Wailea, and like Spieth is a.
I get it.
It's not like these bomber guys can't play like tight or narrow courses or courses.
No. I get that the bomber guys can't play tighter or narrow courses, but like they can go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when you make the other guys go the other way.
Sure, that it doesn't.
And you
fit.
Take the skill and the precision out of it, and it's just a test of brute strength.
Yeah, I can see that.
And I'm not saying that DJ and
right.
Koepka and those guys don't have skill. I don't mean it in that regard at all, but it's just it makes the precision element less important.
The point is, the US team was a strong team in 16, and they're adding to it. Like, there's no doubt. Like, JT was not on that team. Like, Berger again is not. Maybe I might have said this in the past, actually. I don't think Berger's a better player than Fleetwood. I might have actually said that in the past, but I didn't mean it if I did. But the European team is obviously going to be stronger with Rahm, Casey, and Fleetwood. Like, there's no debating that, but it wasn't close last go around, was my overall point.
There were a few guys, too, this week that I really watched a lot of Peters. He was a little bit disappointing today.
Yeah.
But, you know,
tough,
I mean,
Sunday,
yeah,
but yeah.
It was a tough Sunday. He hits the ball pretty high,
right,
too. It was windy. But like Tyrrell Hatton, like he'll be solid.
Yeah.
Watching Alexander Levy.
I hope he makes the team. That'd be awesome. They need a French guy.
All the European journalists were like, yeah, this guy's totally mad. Like he's just insane. And like seeing him in person, like he swings just out of his shoes at every shot. Like, they described him as the European Patrick Reed.
Yes.
Which was, I think, apt.
We,
you know,
need that.
Especially in France at this course. Like, we had dinner last night with Eddie Pepperell, and he was like, seriously, this is going to be, are you guys going to the Ryder Cup? And we're like, almost positive
we're going
to the Ryder Cup. And he was like, good, this is going to be, like, he's like, I might attend as a fan because it's going to be that good.
Yeah. Like the settings, like the 18th hole. I hope every match goes to the 18th hole. It's going to be just absolutely lit. But no, people are like, all right, so I don't know, maybe it was a troll question. It was like, are you changing your Ryder Cup projections now that you've actually seen European talent up front? It's like, no.
I was on Team Europe.
Well, yeah. You were rooting for Europe. Yeah, but
I just think this is a more interesting,
it's not like
menagerie of guys.
This is not the first time like I've been to a European Tour event, or that we've like watched European Tour golf. Come on. Like,
I probably watched more European Tour. Like, that was part of the reason we came to this event.
Yeah. Was
Big Randy and I would basically sit there on Saturday and Sunday mornings, and this would come on at 7 or 8 a.m., and then Neil would watch it back in San Francisco when he got home from the bars, and you know, and like the weather's good and the weather's miserable back home,
right?
And, you know, and it's like, man, this is sweet. And there's a big Falcon clubhouse.
Oh, the Falcon clubhouse. That was pretty much 90% of the reason why we came.
Yeah,
like, was to see the Falcon.
Yeah.
Like, like whoever Big Randy made this comment this week, like, I want to meet the guy that walked into that meeting and said, like, guys, all right, bear with me here. We're going to make a big clubhouse, and it's going to be a giant falcon.
But not only is it going to be a giant falcon, but, like, you can get up in the head of the falcon.
Yeah, there's going to be a little meeting room in the head of the falcon. Yeah. I don't know. I've been to a couple of events. I went to, like, Malaysia and South Korea, and those events to me felt smaller than a normal PGA Tour event that I've been to.
And it was directly back from course to hotel. Right.
Yeah, pretty much. But I expected this week to feel like that event. I expected it to feel like in Malaysia, where I was like, who? I didn't know. Who attends an event in Abu Dhabi? Is it locals? Is it expats?
Abu Dhabi.
I didn't know Abu Dhabi was 90% expats, which we discovered this week. But this event felt way more like a big PGA Tour event than it did like a small PGA Tour event.
Yeah. This felt, I would put it on par with like Colonial. Or, I don't know, probably Memorial's probably a little bit, probably between Colonial and Memorial, like two events that are mainstays on the tour that are you know, exceptional events, but you know, kind of I mean, there's no income tax here, so
they got a VAT now.
5% VAT, people are up in arms.
Yeah, that's not a
January
good
1. But yeah, I mean, like in the pro-am, play with a guy from the Abu Dhabi Sports Council, Brandon Grace, and then guy that runs the like all the Mercedes dealerships in the UAE, and he was basically just saying, he's like he was a German guy, lived in Mexico for a while, lived in Spain for a little bit, and he's like, this is my favorite place I've ever lived. It's just comfortable, and
I think the way I tried to explain it was like, if there was an international space station on Earth, like, this is it. This is like the Truman Show. It is just this bubble that you don't realize that we're bordering Saudi Arabia right now. That we're across the Gulf from Iran.
People are friendly,
but it's just like
a safest
complete bubble.
Place I think I've ever been. It's even more so than Jacksonville or Atlanta, where I grew up. Like it's
a total bubble, and it's like this weird, I don't know, almost like a mythical place. And it's just
The weather is always good. There's like,
it gets really hot in the summer, but like it's 75 degrees and sunny every day here that we've been here. So I understand it now as like this.
It's like Phoenix.
Oasis. Basically. Yeah, it's like an oasis. Yeah.
It's a little bit more humid than Phoenix.
We met some British girls the day we got here that were just, they come here like every January, like to get out of the weather in England. Yeah. And that gets 7 hours.
They said, hey,
flight.
We'd been to Dubai the last 4 years, and then we decided to try out Abu Dhabi. And Abu Dhabi, I think, is a little bit more quiet. You know, Dubai.
Go to your analogy. Do your analogy.
Well,
it's perfect.
Well, so Dubai doesn't have any oil, so they've had to like totally diversify. And then over the last, you know, 4 or 5 years, the price of oil has kind of dipped. And I think Abu Dhabi's kind of ahead of the curve in that regard, where it almost feels like Abu Dhabi has fun. They're successful. They're like somebody that you knew in college that studied hard. They went to business school, but they still had fun along the way. And Dubai seems like the person that, you know, like washed out, went to Vegas and put it all in black sort of thing.
We didn't make it to Dubai. We tried. We wanted to go.
But just the way that everybody kind of talks about it, they're right. Some of these guys, like, I mean, Rory lives in Dubai. Like a lot of these guys live in Dubai. They're all, that was the cool thing about the event today too. Like all these guys are, you know, it's an hour drive.
Right.
I'm trying to think. It'd be like San Francisco and San Jose.
Right. And it's like there's a rivalry. Like it's clear that there's a rivalry between the two cities. But so let's talk about after the round, after, you know, we've had a insanely busy week with some 16, 18 hour days. And we were kind of like, all right, we covered the golf. Like we're done. Let's go get a beer. Like we just went up to the clubhouse, grabbed a beer, and ran into like Fleetwood's caddy up there. And Ian, oh, he's the man.
So Neil had told us to, like, he sent towels to him and he used them in the rounds. And, like, this guy is an absolute frame. I mean, he's
big dude.
He's like 6'6", 6'7". This drunk guy bumped into him earlier on, like, pretty early on in the evening. And I thought Ian was going to swing on
it. But he's, like, the nicest guy in
the
world.
Yeah, and then he was, you know, but, like, he's totally... And he's like, yeah, like, come have a beer. I'll buy you a beer. I'm like, no, we'll buy you a beer, man. You just
actually won the tournament. No, he should buy us a beer. He just made a lot of money. But so yeah, we're having a couple beers with him outside. And he's like, hey, you want to come upstairs? And we go upstairs, and like Fleetwood's there partying with his not really partying. He's got like a 4 month old, and it wasn't getting too wild. Yeah. But it was cool to just sit up there, like the trophy's sitting right there in the middle of the table. And I've kind of always wanted to see the scene of how a guy celebrates a win, and getting to do that was pretty special.
We're in the head of the Falcon.
Correct.
Upstairs.
In the clubhouse.
But, and then, you know, we're sitting next to Tommy's dad up there, who was, I think he laid curbs, like on like kind of the road works and the construction crews. He laid curbs, and I asked him, I was like, are you a golfer? He said, oh, I used to be. I still play. You know, I still play, but I don't play as much. I'm like, how often do you play? He's like, oh, I only play twice a week now. Twice a week.
It's plenty, yeah.
Yeah, you're a big golfer in the States. Yeah. But he said, he said basically he put a club, he waited until Tommy picked up a club on his own accord. And then I said, all right, well, so then when did you know that he was a special player? And he said, from the moment he picked up that first glove.
Really? Yeah. And we spent some time with his coach, Alan Thompson.
Alan Thompson, yeah.
And he was Tommy's coach from the time he was 13 years old. Yep. And just hearing kind of the fascinating story of, he coached him up till the time he was professional, and then kind of told him, I think, you know, he didn't have necessarily confidence in himself. He's like, essentially was a small time coach. I mean, coached him in England, out in Southport. And thought, you know, to take it to the next level, Tommy needed a different coach, and kind of told him that. He just didn't have the same confidence in what he was teaching him, and their relationship just kind of had reached its peak.
It was kind of like he didn't know what he didn't know.
Right. He didn't realize that. So they ended up splitting up for a while. Tommy was, I don't know who taught Tommy after that. And then they ended up,
and like they tried to change his ball flight, and his whole mentality and everything. And he was just totally lost.
He just got disoriented, and it was just too many thoughts or too many different, like he was all messed up on where he was aiming. And then he came back to Alan and said, let's get back to working together. And
Alan kind of diagnosed, like Tommy, like they kind of left on good terms. And
right.
He said, hey man, like, you know, you're not long for me. Go out and see what else is out there.
Sure.
Go work with somebody like Butch or somebody like that. And like, I don't think he went and worked with Butch. I don't
want right.
like, yeah. But, you know, then he kind of came back and sent him a short video of his swing and said, hey, like, I'm lost, man. Like, you know, and within 10 minutes he was like, here's what's wrong. Like,
right.
And it took him 3 to 6 months to really dig out of it and commit to the new thing and everything. But he said, you know, and that was where Tommy, he said tonight, that was where Tommy Fleetwood kicked in to mm-hmm. where, you know, I told him what was wrong. I told him what I thought. I told him how to fix it. And then he just went to work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, from there, I mean, he said that was 18 months ago. And the first 3 months they kind of worked on, you know, the process of it. Next 3 months was kind of applying it on the course. And then really from there, it was like this week last year.
Yeah.
And from then on, it's like he's been
total transformation.
Fuego,
you know? And for every like success story like that, there's got to be how many guys that just don't ever really either find that or re-find it, whatever it is. And to sit there with a guy that kind of brought him to this level on a night that they're celebrating a win was kind of surreal. And kind of to see that just that peak was pretty special.
Well, it was cool too, because you could tell that it was a validation of, you know, he basically said it himself. He said, I didn't have enough confidence in myself, and I didn't know how rock solid my teaching methods were.
Right.
I was just this small time guy at a range.
Right.
And sure enough, like, you know, here, what I was teaching was actually world class, and it's produced these results. And it's,
can we share what Tommy said to us tonight, which was, you know, so we talked to Tommy at the Players. That part of the audio actually ended up going on Kyle Porter's podcast over on CBS. So he's never technically been on our podcast, but we're like, you know, we really should have you on. He was familiar with it. And he's like, yeah, if we get enough, you know, if we get enough requests, yeah, I'll come on. Yeah.
Feedback.
So this is the official, the official request for you guys to flood Tommy's Twitter or whatever way if you want Tommy to come on the podcast, just hit him with a million mentions and he'll do it. So, all right. So we said earlier, like, I want to separate out Tommy, the player, from the person, and don't want to get too clouded by, he's kind of a contagious personality. And like you were saying, he looks, even like every fan that asks him something or says something to him, he looks him in the eye. He acknowledges absolutely everybody and like comes over and smiles, takes a picture with you. And the amount of attention he's getting is increasing every single week. And every single time I've seen him in any kind of scenario, every request you ever have of him, he does it with a smile. That's not a normal thing.
Hearing some of the other caddies talk about like playing with them at, you know, the Open Championship last year, you know, basically his home event, you know, it wasn't his home course growing up, but his home event. And all these guys said, if I have to hear, "Oh, that a boy, Tommy Ladd," one more time, like they were going to lose it, you know? And then we heard that. I mean, the crowds were so friendly today, and it's not like he was going against some adversarial. It was, you know, it was Rory and Ross Fisher and Thomas Peters and Matthew Fitzpatrick, like very Western European or British or Irish guys, you know. And
there was no necessarily reason to favor Tommy over those guys.
And then, you know, but like every time he's got these like steely blue eyes, and he just looks everybody in the eye, and then just talking to it, you know, talking there and having drinks with his buddies afterwards. It was like, yeah, you know, like Tommy's the same guy he was.
Yeah,
he was 5 years ago. He was 18 months ago when he was at the depths of his career. He was 20 years ago.
Easy to root for. And I encourage people to root for him in that regard. Can we talk about Matt Fitzpatrick?
We can.
That guy. So I'm not going to lie, going before we started interviewing him, before we went to interview him.
Hold on. Can we just go back to Tommy's shot on 16?
Okay. Yeah. We got to talk about that.
Yeah.
So people were giving me shit on there. I saw something in my tweet, like, TV can't do justice for how sick this shot was into the wind.
And it was kind of hazy. Yeah. And a little bit, I don't know, there's like a little bit dusty today.
The point I was trying to make was like, yeah, you can see on TV that his shot's into the wind or something like that. But like, you and I play golf, we're sitting there in the fairway right kind of next to him, and like that shot just didn't feel possible, like into and off the right.
I struggle into the sun, first of all, because you just can't really see your target. It was uphill, it was into the wind, and it was hazy as hell outside. Yeah. And he just flushed it, and he had no idea, like he knew he hit it well, but he had no idea kind of, you know, where it was headed. And Ian, his caddy, was like, he was like, yeah, that was.
So we hit it, and he didn't know where it was. Like, is that good? And he's like, yeah. And Ian picked up the bag and was walking before it even apexed. And
he'd made like a 25-footer for birdie on the previous hole.
Yeah, and the run, and it was blowing like pretty damn hard.
He was three or four. He was four shots down at one point late in the front nine today, too. So
when I watch golf on TV, when the wind is blowing, I don't know. To me, it still doesn't seem that difficult for these guys. But when you actually like are there and feel the wind and stuff,
It was a 25-mile-an-hour wind today too.
It was not insignificant by any means.
Especially when you juxtapose it with the rest of the week.
Yeah,
when it's totally benign,
nothing. And then he just hooded a 3-wood coming into 18 and messed it all up, but got up and down for a really clutch birdie.
Well, I mean, 17, he piped the drive, just peered it, hit one to probably 15 feet.
That was sick because it was a left to right wind, and he hit it like a little draw against the wind, and you could start to see it draw, and then the wind took it once the spin kind of came off and took it back towards the flag. But
the greens were very, like, they were pretty firm, so you had to clip one in order to get it to stop within 5 feet or so.
But it was just a guy totally in control of his ball, hit a great drive down 18, hit a bad approach, but chipped up to 12 feet or so on 18, drained the putt, and just let it out.
Closer than that.
Yeah, but I mean, it was such a clutch putt, and I'm pumped for him, man. I'm excited to watch him. He's going to play a lot more in the States
again,
this year.
It's like he picked up right where he left off, and there hasn't been any adjustment period to where he's basically felt like, oh shit, I'm an elite player now.
Right.
Like, and it's like he felt confident all the way along, and he's just riding the wave.
Right. Before we get into Fitz, should we talk about the McRib? The artist formerly known as the McRib.
Yeah, the pacemaker.
We're retiring the McRib nickname, and we suggested a few to
the Big Aorta, the Notorious EKG.
And he wanted to go with the pacemaker. So the pacemaker is back, just doesn't have the same ring as the McRib is back, though, is the only thing.
I feel like the pacemaker's always been here.
Okay. Yeah. But he's back. We can say that, right?
Yeah. No, no, I think this has been a very, I mean, really, he played three, I don't want to say flawless rounds. The front nine on Thursday was just kind of.
Just didn't make mistakes.
Just getting the, yeah, you know, just kind of getting things primed a little bit. And then got consistently better each of the first 3 days. And then he was actually playing pretty well through about 11 or 12 holes today, and then kind of sputtered
a little bit.
And then, you know, but I think overall it's a, you know, this is his first time playing in three and a half, 4 months. And it's, he's playing next week. And then my biggest takeaway is he said he's playing 25 events. The Ryder Cup will be his 25th event of the year. And then the way that he was talking, he said, hey, I'll probably play another 4 or 5 after the Ryder Cup.
Right. No, he's super, I don't know, he's amped up, and kind of the way, your takeaway, I guess, from the press conference was, this is Rory 2.0. Like, he spent 10 years on tour, kind of needed a break just for health reasons, and, you know, he took the last few months off, and he's re-energized, and it's going to be kind of like, all right, this is my next 10 years. It's kind of my second phase of my career.
It's almost like he's transitioning into being a veteran.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So there was a ton of encouraging signs. So I got to see a lot of Rory this week, and it felt like, I feel like when Rory gets hot, he either is hitting it to 15 feet on every hole and running in a bunch of 15 footers, or he's stuffing it and making a ton of birdies.
I felt like this week was neither.
It was hitting a ton of shots to 15 feet, and it didn't feel like he made anything. Yeah. And I don't know how his putting numbers would fall out, but he had a lot of wedges in, and he was not hitting a lot of them close. He was not far off, but it just was like every single wedge he would hit in, I'm like, I wanted more. Like, I was kept waiting for him to like start firing at it, and he just was just.
But also, he wasn't. I feel like with the wedges, he's either been on or off. And it was almost encouraging that he wasn't
like middle game.
He wasn't either. He was hitting him to mid range, 15, 20 feet.
Right. So he's gonna have. I don't know. I thought the whole week was encouraging from the perspective. It was like, I didn't feel like I watched him play great golf at any point. He drove it great.
He drove it quite well.
Yeah, he drove it really well. But it wasn't, I don't know, I just never felt like he was not in tight and missing a bunch of short putts.
But he wasn't dialed in from 12 to 15 feet.
His irons weren't totally dialed in, and his putter wasn't dialed in from 12 to 15 feet. Nothing that it's concerned. I mean, the fact that he shot as low as he did was very encouraging in my mind. It felt way closer than at any point in 17.
Yeah. Well, it just felt like he was at ease with everything.
Yeah.
And it felt like, I don't know, I was impressed with, I'll be honest, I was kind of, after 17, it was a transition year, and equipment-wise, and just everything. And I felt like with Harry, you know, it was kind of like Harry was like a temporary stopgap. And I felt like this year, I don't know, Harry was, he seemed like he was a part of the team. And like, I was impressed with Harry just not knowing a whole lot about him going in, and seemed like he was just his regular loop, and they had a very, you know, it was a very seamless camaraderie. So
it is like, and you know, Rory has said in the past, like, he's way more going to be more plugged into his own yardage book. He's going to take more responsibility for yardages, club decisions, etc. But it does seem like, I mean, Harry's like, I don't want to say learning on the job, but it doesn't seem like he's new on the bag anymore.
Like, it seemed like he learned on the job last year. Yeah. He kind of acquitted himself well, and now he's kind of earned his keep. And I mean, the number of times he called Harry in to kind of confirm what his read was on a putt was actually, I was like, whoa, like he's, you know, like Harry's the real deal.
Yeah. Know? No. So I thought really good opening week for the McRib, sorry, the pacemaker. And I'm just really encouraged by how much we're going to see him this year and how much he's going to play in the U.S. And, I don't know, just kind of with Tiger coming back this coming week and Rory being healthy now and all of this, like JT
I think
coming up the year.
The married life has helped Rory too.
Yeah.
Just getting that sense of
stability.
It's given him some balance and some foundation. I mean, shit, the whole nutritionist thing.
Yeah.
He was talking about his omega-3s and omega-6s. I was like, Rory, you're starting to sound like Tiger a little bit.
All right. So Matt Fitz, going into us interviewing him this week, I'm not going to lie. I thought, didn't know a ton about him. Obviously knew he was a U.S. amateur champ. Spent a short amount of time at Northwestern, but just
very, very short amount
very
of time.
Very short. I kind of thought he'd be boring. I'm not going to lie. And I wasn't sure what to expect.
I knew there was enough there. Randy and I have kind of followed him, just because he was kind of met up with him at Hilton Head like 3 or 4 years ago when he was still in AM. But didn't really know much about his personality, just knew about his game. And then for him to, I don't know, I feel like he's kind of bringing, and this isn't meant to be derogatory towards his game at all, but like kind of bringing a BB gun to a gunfight.
Right.
And like that BB gun's getting more and more and more powerful as he fine tunes his swing, as he gets in the weight room and everything like that. But I think it's just a testament to the guy knows how to play golf. He's not, he's utilized the TrackMan, which he talked about a lot on the podcast, but he's basically kind of bootstrapping himself up to a world-class level from a guy that managed the golf course, drove it in the fairway, and just putted lights out.
I was just impressed, too, with how willing he was to speak out about his disappointment on his playing time at the Ryder Cup, and just he's a well-spoken guy, but not afraid to say some things.
He's hungry.
Yeah. No, there's a lot of kind of passion behind what he does, and seems to be a guy that works really hard. I know you were talking to his manager just about how his golf swing is high maintenance and that he works a lot at it. It's so much based on timing, and I was not expecting like him to be the kind of guy to joke around during the middle of a round, during the final round of a Sunday. Like he hit this just trage driver off 5 into the wind and just kind of like turned and smirked at me like, yeah, that was for you. Like, I was not expecting like
he would just come up. I don't know. I kind of try to stay in the shadows and like, I don't know, middle of the round on Saturday, just came up and like fist bumped me. Yeah, dude, what's up?
Yeah, some guys just like get totally locked in, which is to be more of what I would expect. Like not to talk to people during the middle of a round, but didn't expect him to just be like that cool and kind of entertaining and funny. So after he walked off, and again, I tweeted about these stories, but like after he walked off and shot 29 on Saturday, like looked over
with two fairways.
Yeah. He's like, I should come on the podcast more often. Like he knew like I was going to say something about the podcast bump.
So today his caddy, he's walking between 9 and 10 and I'm standing on 10T. I kind of just gotten out there. I was in the media center prior and he's just ripping a cigarette, just like taking the longest drags I've ever seen as he's walking up. And I'm like, good one, huh? And he's like, oh, this is the best part of my day, man. And I felt like Neil and Randy would have been like, oh, this guy is speaking to my soul right now. And he's like, yeah, man, it's the only long walk on the course. Otherwise, I don't have a chance to just kind of be to myself and smoke a cig and just kind of decompress before the back nine. And then everybody walks up and the hubbub kind of commences, but he was like, this is just my little 30 seconds of the day. And
what did you think of playing the Pro-Am with Brandon Grace?
Brandon was fantastic. It was a ball-striking fiesta all day. Not on my end, on his end.
You hit it pretty good.
I was shocked just at how he doesn't carry a 3-iron, he doesn't carry a 4-iron. He carries like utility irons, and for somebody who hits his long irons and his mid irons as well as he does, just traps them and compresses them. That was a little bit surprising. I'm a little bit, I don't want to say concerned, but a little bit taken aback that he hasn't won more and done more on the world stage, because he's so
well rounded,
so rock solid and well rounded with every element of his game. And then Zach, his caddy, was the big takeaway for me from the day was how cool Zach was and how willing to interact and just how good of a story he had too. I mean, he's just a genuine, authentic guy. And they were talking Afrikaans to each other all day, which was fascinating as well.
It was funny, like, hey, I've never really caddied before, so caddying for you alone, and I was not even, I was more focusing on, like, filming you than I was caddying for you, but, like, I didn't, just being so, in my head, I've always thought, like, I could caddy for a tour guy, like, I could do this. The more I'm out there, the more I realize that I absolutely couldn't. Like, he has the rogue driver in play, and I'm asking a ton of questions about it. I haven't even hit it yet. And he's messing around a lot with it in between holes. And he hits this drive off one of the holes. And he had it set to like 11 and a half or something, because I think he was
shout out to the Fonz. He was tinkering with it. He was changing
hit this drive
settings.
Just to me looked absolutely murdered. And he's like before that even apex, he's like, oh no. And he goes right back to the screw, unscrews it, and D lofts it, hits another ball, and it to me looked the exact same. He's like, oh, that's more like it.
Yeah.
Maybe was 5 feet lower, yeah. But that was, to me, was like, oh my God. Like, this is, I've always known this is a different sport, but I didn't know how different of a sport this was until we saw that. All right, let's wrap it with a few other little nuggets from the week. We got a flight we got to catch here. I still need to pack. Here.
What time is it?
It's 10:30 p.m. I'm going to flight in 4 hours.
We got to go check the Jags game. See if
that's
it's
true.
Gonna plane at the airport.
I'm not sure how we're going to do this.
Duval.
What else? What other, like, any guys you saw this week or kind of younger guys that you hadn't got a chance to see or anything you kind of, anything else that stuck out at you?
I may be mispronouncing it, but Thomas
Dietrich? So
it's
something you learn too is everyone on the European tour has some kind of accent. To us, has some kind of accent. So
I listened to your podcast. Like, and that was part of the treat for me this week, was just rubbing shoulders with the Sky Sports guys, and then, you know, the guys that write for the Times London, the Sunday Times,
David
Guardian,
Cannon, your idol.
David Cannon. Oh my gosh.
We need to have David Cannon on the podcast.
Talking to David Cannon on, you know, a couple of different bus rides to and from the course. The guy's been photographing golf for 40, 45 years. It's been to, 120, 130 straight majors.
The statistics behind, like, his career are just fascinating.
And he was telling me a story about, I don't know if you've ever seen the 30 for 30 on Hillsborough.
Oh.
And he has to, there's a court date set.
Explain what Hillsborough is for people.
So Hillsborough is like this just kind of English soccer disaster that
1989, I think it was, that 96 people died at this. Long story short, like, there was a 30 for 30 on it, and there was kind of a police mishap. They ended up literally opening the floodgates to, like, let way too many people into it, and people got smashed.
And it would keep spectators in, like, these pens to keep them from fighting with one another.
And they got smashed.
And that was another takeaway from, it was like, Richie is Scottish, Eddie's English. Like, just talking to them about, like, the consensus is, like, you kind of always lump Brits in together.
Right.
But it's like, no, man, like, the English like to fight.
That's what Richie said.
No, but that's, yeah, just in general. Yeah. Like, I think that's, you know, because some of the Eurotour guys were saying that as well. Like, the Eurotour social media guys are like, yeah, like, I'm proudly English, but I, like, and I don't really like to fight, but I know my countrymen like to fight, like to drink and fight. But
anyways, David Cannon was a photographer at this match that, you know, 96 people died at. Like, just
he was on the field, disaster. And they kept letting all these people in, and he kind of heard some ancillary conversations that turned out to be not so ancillary, that kind of paved the way for this mishap to happen. And it's been 30 something, you know, it's been 30 years basically, and he's like, I've never been to court before ever, and I have to go testify before basically, like, what's England's version of the Supreme Court,
right?
You know, during the court date is set for during the Ryder Cup. You know, so it was just stark. And but so he used to cover English football and golf, and he said after that I just completely lost my appetite.
Yeah,
for football, which is, you know, that's golf. That was golf's gain, because he's iconic, and he's you know, probably 80% of the photographs that you see on
Getty or any
the newspapers of note, like, those are David Cannon photographs,
right? A little bit of, I mean, I think it may not be that intriguing to people listening, but it is definitely to us, kind of the way European Tour operates was just like an extreme breath of fresh air as far as allowing us to kind of shoot what we wanted, and kind of just the general laid back atmosphere of the whole tour. Just it was so much fun. Like, it was so much fun to be around and just kind of feel comfortable. You never feel like you're stepping on people's toes there, and just kind of the ability to, you know,
not only was it
talk to guys
accommodating, But it was, you know, because, all right, accommodating, that could be a result of this being one of the first tournaments of the year, and it's kind of an away game for them in the Middle East here. But beyond that, it was hospitable.
Yeah.
You know, where you felt like, all right, if you had a problem with the internet, or if you, you know, if you didn't know where to go for lunch, like, these guys would kind of point you in the right direction.
I had no idea there were this many podcast listeners in the Middle East, too. We met a ton of people that were, you know, that pay attention to the show or whatever.
Met Dave, who lives in Switzerland.
Yeah, I mean, we had a blast. So
It was
great experience. I think
it was perspective all the way around.
Yeah, no, it was just, I mean, there's, you know, there's certain hubs of golf around the world. This is the only one that none of us had ever really been to, I think. And this is something that I want to go back to. I want to see Dubai. I want to go to Dubai. I want to go to more events here.
I want to go to Oman.
Yeah.
New tournament is here. So they've kind of, that was another thing I wanted to touch on, was in the past, this tournament has been the lead-in tournament, but then there was the Qatar Masters in the middle, and then Dubai. And, you know, 3-week stretch is a big ask for a lot of guys, especially as they're heading into, you know, some of these guys head over and play Riviera, or, you know, a lot of these guys are playing Valspar or Bay Hill. You know, and then you've got the WGC Mexico and match play, and it's like, you know, these guys really have to, you know, it's kind of like dominoes in the first 3 months of the season, which events you want to play and how you want to get a little bit of rest before things ramp up. And this year, having Abu Dhabi and Dubai back-to-back weeks has been
huge.
Has been essential.
Getting rid of that, getting rid of Qatar in between the two of them is great for.
And it sounded like Qatar is just, you know, that, like, I don't know. Some of the guys just, they're like, this tournament's awesome. Dubai's awesome. Qatar wasn't all that comfortable.
No.
There's some bad hombres over in Qatar, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's not, it's definitely not like that here. I mean, I think the Emiratis that we've met just take such unbelievable pride, especially, like, yeah, it is United Arab Emirates, but, like, they are. Abu Dhabi is a thing, and, like,
it's like New York versus Boston,
right?
Is how I would kind of ascribe Dubai, and
the pride is real. It is real, and it was, you could feel it, and you could kind of just see people beaming with pride with how this event went and everything like that. So I was honestly not expecting to enjoy it nearly as much as we did, but
and then you know, it was really cool today. One of my pet peeves in the States is you have, you know, a tournament will end, or, you know, there'll be a thrilling finish to a tournament, and then everybody just leaves.
Right.
And, you know, like, and I'm not sure if this was just a product of everybody just having to drive an hour north to Dubai or what, but literally, like, the scene outside the clubhouse or on the back terrace of the clubhouse was, there was just as many people out there 3 hours after the round as there was right after the round.
Probably a good amount didn't know the tournament had ended or had.
I felt like all the people, like, maybe yesterday, but I felt like today, everybody, that it was European tour officials, it was was volunteers, it was everybody, it was like everybody had worked hard all week, and then
celebrated,
and then this was kind of their celebration and the fruits of their labor, and it was really refreshing instead of everybody just saying,
"We're out.
Hey, let's go home."
Yeah. You know? On that note.
Let's go home.
Let's go home. We're out of here. This is 10:45 Sunday night. We have got a pretty long night ahead of us, but
and then we got an 8 or 9 hour layover in New York.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, awesome week here. I can't wait to come back and cover some more European Tour golf. I know we're going to be back for Germany later this year, and hopefully Scotland, and going to be back for the Ryder Cup, and hopefully doing a lot more stuff over here. But pretty awesome week. Thank you everyone that helped make it happen. Thanks for everybody that followed along. On that note, we'll catch you next week.
Crack on.
Crack on.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most.
Better than most!